Juno.com, listener-supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunathchish, Hawa, Tuxaknusum, Slamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, we talk with Juno author Ken Post about his new short story collection, Greyhound Cowboy and Other Stories, and his appearance this Friday at Hearthside Books. We preview the Tlingit and Haida Public Safety Division's upcoming Community Emergency Response Team class that begins on November 8th. And First Friday is coming up this week, and we look forward to openings and other events with the Juno Douglas City Museum and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. And Caitlin Warbelow is in concert on Monday, November 4th, as part of the Golden Hour Concert Series. Those conversations and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, Ka Eat with the Shu Yi, We Kashuk Ay Tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau khana khaya ha ani kakh gnil chish.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. That's little Caitlin Warbelow, who will be in concert this Monday. We'll be featuring her music throughout all our transitions today on Juno Afternoon. You're listening to Community Supported KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Local author Ken Post has had a long career, 35 years with the Forest Service. He turned to writing in 2014 and now has a new collection of short stories premiering this Friday, November 1st. Authors Kim Hecox and Lynn Schooler praise Ken's book for his warm, alive stories that provide some surprises and unexpected twists and turns. Ken will be at Hearthside Books downtown on launch day this Friday, November 1st, from 5 to 6 p.m. for a reading and book signing. And you can find out more at kenpoststories.com. Ken joins me now in studio. Gunathchish Yigudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasaiti, Ken, how's it going?
Great. Thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, you have a copy of your book right there. It's so cool. It's out. It's coming out. It premieres this Friday. That's when it's published, right?
Well, it's actually people are getting copies now that have gone ahead and pre-ordered them. So they're out, but the official launch is at the Hearthside this Friday for the book signing.
Oh, that's so cool. That's going to be so awesome. And so let's talk a little bit about this, your history of writing, because I know, at least according to your website, you started in 2014, basically. But did you have inclinations to be a writer when you were a younger person?
Yeah, I think I've always enjoyed writing, and I think what happened was in around 2014, I decided to kind of push forward and actually write a story or two and just see how it went. I didn't really have any particular grand design to go any further than that, and you wrote a story, and you write another story, and then all of a sudden one gets published, and you go, maybe I can write a few more stories, and you have other creative ideas, and they just kind of take off.
Wow, that's awesome. So where did that first idea come from? I know you spent 35 years in the Forest Service, so you probably had a lot of stories to draw on in terms of those kinds of ideas.
Yeah, well, certainly my Forest Service career has informed a lot of the stories. About a half dozen of the stories are actually what I call my Forest Service stories. You don't have to necessarily be a Forest Service employee to, you know, understand what happens in the woods, but it just kind of brings it home that, you know, some of the, you know, working together in remote areas with crews and certainly the personal dynamics that occur out there can be sometimes interesting. And other stories that I have are just kind of more of a random thing. I mean, I think generally through this collection, one of the common threads is the evolving nature of friendship, the struggle for acceptance, and I think just the decisions that we make as we try to get on with our lives. And sometimes these decisions take place in unusual circumstances.
How does the idea first strike you for a story? Is it something you see or something you hear or somebody says something as they're walking by you and you go, that would be a good story?
I would say all of the above. it's in the case of Greyhound Cowboy, which is the title story, it actually goes back to a time when I was traveling through on a Greyhound bus and got stuck in a snowstorm in Billings. And there was a cowboy with his saddle and was riding the bus. And that image stuck with me all these decades later, and so I wrote an entire story around that little event.
Oh wow! So yeah. you had remembered. That's what I'm saying. Like you have these things that you've clocked throughout your life that then now that you settled down to write, right? You said, okay, now I'm going to sit down and write. These things were in there percolating over the years.
Yeah, there's definitely some things that percolate, or there's just one image, and then and then you wind up building on it. I liken it to the grain of sand in an oyster. You know, you have this little grain of sand, and then something you start adding layer upon layer, and the next thing you know, you may actually have a little pearl that becomes a story. And so just about anything can prompt a story.
Wow, that's kind of cool. Now, how did you decide on the short story form? Is that something that you've always been interested in terms of short stories? You've read those throughout your life?
I don't think I have the bandwidth to write a novel. And so you can basically, it just takes so much mental energy and stick with it on this to write a novel. And I just don't think I have that in me at this point. And so a short story you can work on and you can wrap it up and move on to the next story. So that's, I think, really more about that, how that evolved.
Is there something about the short story form? I know, like, from the theater, right, from my background, when you have full-length plays, but then you have these short stories, and authors sometimes decide they've got this one idea, right, and they can do something with this one idea for 10 pages or 15 pages or whatever, as opposed to trying to stretch it out. Does it give you, like, a focus onto the main event of the story?
Yeah, short story writing is a lot different than writing a novel. I mean, you really have to winnow down what it is you're trying to say and kind of jump right into things and wrap them up, too. And you don't have a lot of space. I mean, you have a couple thousand words, which could be 10 or 15 pages, depending. And in that story, you've got to have, you know, some semblance of a plot. You got to have some characters that people can relate to and some kind of ending, hopefully, that, you know, brings some level of thought or conclusion. So it's a very different, and it's a different skill set in some ways.
Now, I quoted, I didn't really quote them directly, but Kim Hecox and Lynn Schooler, well-known local authors here in Alaska and in Juneau, they talked about the surprises and unexpected twists and turns. And I'm curious about when you think about writing a story, do you have like a twist that comes up and you're writing backwards, or is it something that you develop as you go along?
Yeah, I think that it depends on the story. I think there's one or two where I kind of had something, a surprise I kind of knew, and I just had to figure out where it was going to go in the story. In others, I got into the story and maybe didn't know exactly where I was going, and then it dawned on me that I was going to have to go in this direction or wanted to go in that direction. And it just evolved that way. So it's kind of a combination depending on the story itself.
Does the story sometimes tell you which way it's going to go?
Not too often. I think it's more...
You've got a handle on it.
I have painted myself into a couple corners, you know, story-wise. But I think for the most part, if I don't always know where it's going, a lot of times I just kind of stop and kind of let it go for a little bit. And that's one of the recommended things for writers, is to just let your story sit and percolate. And then something comes back to you, and then you kind of figure your way out of it.
Yeah, it's like that image of the cowboy, right? Sort of, it was just in there for so long, and then, you know, it came out. So speaking of that story, that's the title story. It's called Greyhound Cowboy and Other Stories. What kinds of stories are we going to encounter in the book?
Well, you've got, you know, a variety of Forest Service stories, everything from things that happen in Southeast Alaska. I've got a story about a woman on a hotshot crew in Montana. Another story about a Forest Service lookout and some a person who shows up at their lookout and what happens when that occurs. And then I've got a variety of other stories. One of them is about a gentleman who's trying to dispose of his parents' ashes, and he wants to dispose on them on the what used to be their family farm. It's no longer in their family anymore. And in a lot of states, you need landowner permission to put ashes on. And his story is about what happens with the landowner and things like that. I have another story that's kind of, I wouldn't say a farce, but it's kind of a fun take on all these outdoor adventures that you see maybe on the cover of Outside Magazine. And sometimes the struggle, I think, that they have trying to manage a career where they're basically not home and have a reasonable chance of dying with having a family. And so the balance of that is part of the story. And I try to tell it in kind of a fun way. It's one of the, I guess, lighter stories in the collection.
So, awesome. Yeah. That's cool. Now, I mentioned at the top that you're going to be at Hearthside Downtown in the Wharf on Friday from 5 to 6. You're going to be doing some reading and some signing of the book?
That'll be just a signing there. I'll be doing readings later on in November at a couple different locations here in town.
Oh, okay. I see. All right. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, because this came to you in retirement, right? You retired basically, or did you start right before you retired? Was it around the same time?
Yeah, I started a little before I retired, and I started in 2014 and then retired in 2018. So I've really been able to put a lot more energy into it here in the last few years.
And so walk us through, I'm curious for folks who may be thinking about writing or have an idea or want to get into writing. They write something down, but then I want to talk about the business side a little bit. How do you go about, what did you do? Where did you learn how to get published and figure all that out?
Well, yeah, it's definitely a learning curve. You know, there is the writing side and there's the business side. And, you know, if you're writing short stories, once you write one, then you've got to submit. So you have to submit, and there's many, many places throughout the world, actually, that you can submit your story to. Most of the ones I submit to are, you know, North America, mostly Canada and the U.S., and trying to figure out what kind of magazine might take your writing is one thing. You try to see if there's some kind of match. And so then you submit, and you get rejected a heck of a lot. You have to get used to that.
Is it all by email nowadays?
You know, the bulk of it is by email. I'd say 99% of it is by actually, there's a website a lot of magazines use called Submittable, and you basically just shoot off a copy of a cover letter and your actual story, and usually often you will pay a fee, depending on the magazine, just to submit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then do you feel like, do you have to, now that the book is out or coming out, do you feel like that you have help from the publisher in terms of marketing it? Are you having to like create social media accounts for yourself to get the word out? And, you know, how are you working that side of things?
Well, I have a pretty small publisher. It's the University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point. And I was lucky that they, you know, felt comfortable publishing my book. They liked it. And so they're small, so they really don't have any, you know, money to really devote to marketing. So, you know, with the exception of them putting it on their website and some, you know, social media stuff, the marketing pretty much comes down to me. I'm, you know, the CEO of my enterprise here. Yeah.
And so how have you found that process so far?
It's a lot of work. You know, there's a lot of work not doing as much writing because I'm, you know, trying to get word out about the book either through social media, of which I'm not particularly gifted. I have a Facebook and I have a very minor Instagram, you know, account. But a lot of it is, you know, just trying to put yourself out there, you know, writing to independent bookstores, emailing friends, begging, whatever it takes to just get your stories out there.
Wow, that's so awesome. Greyhound Cowboy and Other Stories by Ken Post. It's coming out this Friday. Now, obviously, you're in the process of marketing this right now, but what do you think are you working on more stuff?
Actually, I have a fair amount of stories that have either been published already in small literary magazines. Many of the stories in Greyhound Cowboy have actually been published prior to in literary magazines. And so I have a whole nother set of stories, though a lot of them, not all of them, have been published. And so it is possible that I would try to see if I can get a second collection published.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's so cool. Like, it's just wonderful, the creativity that exists in Juneau, and that, you know, you've had these ideas, you've had these images ruminating for years and years and years, and to be able to sit down and did you have any, did you train yourself, or did you just start writing and keep writing and...
I pretty well trained myself, but I was also really fortunate. There's we had a small writing. We still have a small writing group in town here, and we would meet, you know, monthly or, you know, except for during the summer. And it was really lucky to run into a group of folks that were great with providing critiques of your work. And that is just really essential. This book couldn't have been done without members of the Juneau writing group providing really meaningful critiques to the work.
That's awesome. Yeah, having other folks to bounce ideas off of and things like that is probably really valuable.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to write, and it's fun for people to say, yeah, that's really great stuff. But to grow as a writer, you have to have people tell you, yeah, that your writing really needs work, and here's how, and here's how, because that's what you really need, because it's pretty hard to write a story without having some kind of constructive criticism improve it.
Well, congratulations on the book. I think it's just awesome. I'm really excited for you and this next level of your career and life to be able to get these stories down on paper. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
Ken will be at Hearthside Books downtown on launch day this Friday, November 1st from 5 to 6 p.m. for a book signing. You can find more at kenpoststories.com. And I'm assuming since it's at Hearthside, that Hearthside will be carrying it locally. And I'm sure you can also find the book online at your various different bookstore retailers, but why not buy local, right?
Yeah, definitely. If you have an opportunity, by all means, stop by Hearthside. Olga has been super supportive of, you know, me and other writers here in town. So that's really the best thing you can do is buy the book and buy it locally, and that serves everyone.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Ken, so much for coming in. Gunnath Tees for being here. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Now, Tongass Voices, a series from KTOO sharing weekly perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Aaron Surma leads the Juneau chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI. He said winters in Juneau can be tough, and it takes creativity and small steps to keep your mental health strong when it's dark and cold.
I just see it as like people turning into molasses. It's just, you slow down, you hunker down, and like there's pieces of the hunkering down that can be charming or pleasant. But I think it also speaks to people losing their routine, losing what was working for them the other 6, 7, 8 months of the year where the weather was less difficult, where there was more sunshine. My name is Aaron Surma. I'm the executive director of NAMI Juneau. I've been addressing my own mental health, actively doing it for 25 years and like just like feeling the effects of my crummy mental health for multiple years before that. And I have probably done most of the things that exist. I've been in inpatient treatment, I've seen therapists, I've taken medications, I've gone to support groups. I've done a lot of the stuff that you can, and I've just done like things in my life to also improve my mental health. And it's been a ton of trial and error. And I think it's some trial and error that came out of me not having any help or guidance along the way. So I think my main motivation is I wasted a lot of time trying to figure out what worked for me. And I hope that I can be helpful to other people so they don't spend as much time kind of like spinning their wheels, so to speak, trying to figure out how they can feel better than they feel. I would think about what works for you in summer and how can you replicate some of that stuff. Like for me, being around other people is really important. And it's easy in summer to be spontaneous and be like, hey, it's a nice day out. Let's all go have a bonfire at this place at 7 p.m. today. And that seems achievable. There's a lot more spontaneous social interaction that I have with my friends in the summer. Doesn't happen in the winter. And so having things that are scheduled helps me to still get my social needs met. So I turned into a much bigger jock than I've ever been in my life once I moved to Juneau. I started playing a ton of sports. I played like basketball sometimes before moving here, but I really crave that teamwork connection and social engagement. And that's one great way to do it, especially in the winter. What is something that you know will feel good if you do it that seems achievable? And there's like a classic example of just making your bed in the morning so you give yourself one gold star for the day or check off one thing on your to-do list. Just what does feel realistic? Is it just going outside and looking around for 10 minutes and coming back in just so you don't feel stuck in your house? Maybe that's the thing. And I think that that stuff does snowball. When I feel stuck, like just walking outside, it's like, oh yeah, there's a whole world out here. I am not just inside the four walls of whatever room I'm in. And so I think just going outside for 1 minute is like meaningful for me. A lot of people are feeling like stuck in the winter, and those invites to do something and just explicitly saying like, hey, let's just get out of the house and let's do this thing. Even if it's small, even if it's, let's have a cup of coffee together, let's have a cigarette together, let's, whatever it is, making those choices feels good. Those are small, achievable things. It's nice to feel like you're in it with other people. Many people who choose to live here because of the summer stuff, and you aren't doing that stuff anymore. It feels like there's less options. When it's raining sideways and 35 degrees, the world doesn't feel as accessible. And so I think those lifestyle things are meaningful and real as well.
That was Aaron Surma from NAMI Juno for this week's Tongass Voices. Up next, we chat with the Juno Douglas City Museum about what they've got in store for November and beyond. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Juno Douglas City Museum has new shows, new hours, and thanks to generous supporters, free admission. Here to tell us all is Kate Ross from the museum. And you can find everything we talk about today at juno.org/museum. Gonna chi sha yigudi. Thank you so much, Kate, for being here again. Wasa iti, how's it going?
It's going good. Here we are transitioning into fall. I can't believe it's almost November.
Darker, wetter. But that means changes for the museum. Tell us all about the changes.
It does, yeah. So as we head into the winter, as everyone knows, in the summer we have one exhibit up in our big main gallery, right? One big summer exhibit. And in the winter, we're so excited because we get to have our solo artists coming in, and we change that up a lot more frequently. So we're really stoked to have actually two new exhibits, a main one in our Murray Gallery and then a secondary exhibit in our community room. And both opening this weekend.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. And tell us about the first one.
Yeah. So opening reception on Friday, first Friday, in our big main gallery is Li Yuan Zhang with Alaska Wilderness Whispers. And so this is acrylic paintings and also pyrography, which is wood burning.
Oh.
So she has some really cool pieces of wood featuring animals like bears and moose, things like that. But it's burned into the wood. So it's a really cool textural style. And then the majority of her show is paintings, and they're beautiful. Beautiful and vibrant, lots of color. They're featuring Alaskan landscapes and animals. And yeah, it's a really beautiful show. So that opens this Friday, November 1st, with our opening reception from 4:30 to 7.
Awesome. Yeah. And then the next one, which opens the next day?
The very next day.
All right.
I know. We have so much going on. So if you've been to the museum recently, or if you just are familiar with it, you know we have our little community room, which is where we show the movie in the summers for visitors. And in the winter, we don't show that movie. So it turns into a secondary, a little bit smaller, but very cool gallery space. And so in there, we have Olivia Raster with Scientific Illustrations, Alaskan Wildlife and Landscapes. So some similar subjects as the other exhibit, but Olivia's are very influenced by her time in school when she was learning how to become a scientific illustrator. So one of the things on display there, so she has a mixture of paintings and some digital media, but the thing that I think is very, very cool is she has a big book that you're actually welcome to gently flip through, showing some of her process of scientific illustration. So there's sketches of animal anatomy and little, you know, parts of a wing of an eagle and things like that. It's a really, really cool little exhibit.
I love that.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have necessarily an opening or anything. It just is part of, it's just going to be, but maybe Olivia will be there on Friday as well or no?
She will be there on Saturday. We're going to do a daytime opening reception from 1 o'clock to 3:30 on Saturday, November 2nd. Yeah. So we've got, you know, kind of a double dose. Her show is up. You will be able to see that on first Friday, but we are doing an opening reception on Saturday. And if you come on Saturday, we might have a special little gift for people that show up. So.
Oh, a little tease for a special gift. I love that. Okay. So that's two new new exhibits that are opening. And then you've also got some other stuff going on for November, right? The Sobolev Writing Program?
Yeah, that's a program that is really cool. We've been doing for a number of years. November 14th is Dr. Walter Sobolev Day. So for the entire month of November, we provide free note cards for people to come in and pick up if you'd like to write a letter of gratitude or recognition for someone or encouragement. And so we have free note cards. There's all sorts of different styles of those. We will also provide a stamp if you need one. And if you want to just write something there and leave it for us, we'll even mail it for you.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I like that. That's really cool. And then you also have the 12 by 12 people need to start thinking about.
Start thinking about it now. I mean, it's never too early, right? Like, if you didn't start thinking about it as soon as it came down last year. So this year it is our 21st annual 12 by 12 community art exhibition. The theme this year is rhythm.
Okay.
So go crazy with that. That could mean so many different things.
And is there a time when those are due?
Yeah, those are due in February.
Okay. So
February 15th.
Yeah, people got some time.
You've got time. It's getting darker and colder out there. Hunker down. Make some cool art as long as it is within 12 by 12 by 12 if you make it 3D.
Oh, yeah. 12 by 12 by 12. I love that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, things have changed for the museum in terms of hours and admission. You want to go over that a little bit?
Yep, absolutely. So for the entire winter months, we do have free admission. November is free admission given by or donated by Michelle Storer very graciously. And so we are open from 10 o'clock to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. So 10 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday, free admission all winter. We will be closed on Thanksgiving and the day after, and we take a couple other holidays here and there. But for the most part, yeah, it's free. Come hang out. Come check out all of our new exhibits and continuing exhibits.
I love that. That's so great. So two new exhibits. Yeah, it's going to be great. The Alaskan Wilderness Whispers and the Scientific Illustrations, Alaska Wildlife and Landscapes. Mm-hmm. They both open this weekend, plus the Sobolev Writing Program and all that good stuff. And as I mentioned, you can find all of this information at juno.org/museum. Kate, thanks so much. Gwyneth Cheese for coming in again and telling us all about what's going on at the Juno Douglas City Museum.
Anytime. Gwyneth Cheese.
I love that. Thank you. Up next, Tlingit and Haida has a very important emergency response team training starting November 8th with in-person and virtual options. We'll get all the details next on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clenady have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. An upcoming class from Tlingit and Haida will be teaching disaster preparedness, first aid, fire safety, and more. It's from the Public Safety Division Community Emergency Response Team. It will begin Friday next week, November 8th, and be held at Generations Southeast on Hospital Drive. Register by this Friday at generationssoutheast.org, and there is no cost. And here to share more with us is Alicia Sell. Gwyneth Chi, Sha Yi Gudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to chat with you today, Alicia. Wasiti, how's it going?
Good afternoon. I'm actually a long ways away right now down in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Holy moly.
Some training opportunities, but I'm enjoying some warm weather while I'm out of town for a few days and looking forward to getting back home and really excited for this class coming up, though.
That's awesome. Well, I hope you enjoy the East Coast and get a little of that sunshine and bring it back with you, hopefully.
I will do my best.
Okay, so this class, tell us a little bit about the Public Safety Division of Tlingit and Haida and the Community Emergency Response Team. Let's start there.
Sure. So public safety with Clinkin and Haida, we were most notable recently during the flood. Of course, our Tribal Emergency Operations Center was stood up during the flood for the valley. And our team was phenomenal during that response. We got right to work, being able to help out not just only our tribal citizens that were affected by the flood, but also other citizens of Juneau. President Peterson is always very open, and you know, anytime that we are able to help anybody, we are all a community. We are all a family, whether you're a tribal member or non-tribal member, which is just a phenomenal thing to have that ability to be able to help out all of our neighbors that we can. And so, along with that, Clinkin and Haida Public Safety has started teaching this new. Well, it's not even a new program. It's new to Southeast Alaska. And it's called CERT, and it stands for the Community Emergency Response Team. And it's actually a FEMA-based program. It's a three-day course, and during this course, it teaches some phenomenal skills. We will teach you about how to prepare for disasters, both in your home, at your work, just get your family ready and be prepared for anything that may come around. We also teach some basic first aid skills, some fire safety skills, including how to use a fire extinguisher. We also teach some light search and rescue skills. So being able to even help out in times of need, you can be able to respond to help your neighbors as things come up and disasters happen, which we all know they do in Alaska. There's a couple other sections in there. We talk about disaster psychology, so be able to, you know, maintain our own kind of care for our brain and our hearts and our souls as we're helping out our neighbors, and being able to know kind of what they may be going through and how to best help them while they're going through disasters as well. It's just a phenomenal course. It teaches some phenomenal skills that could very, very well be useful in any way. So the class is going to be held in person in Juneau, but we're also offering a virtual option for a few of our service communities throughout the Southeast Alaska area. So for those families that are in Pelican, Angoon, Cake, Klukwan, Klawak, Kasan, Heidelberg, and Saxman, we have opportunities for people in those communities to log in via Zoom and attend the class virtually. And then at another time later, probably early spring, maybe even into summer, depending on my schedule, I will be traveling out to those communities to provide the hands-on skill sessions for them and be able to get the hands-on parts of it that they're not going to be able to do virtually, where we're going to go through, for example, in the medical section, we're going to do a head-to-toe assessment of a person. So learning how to check a person for injuries, being able to treat some of those injuries, things to look for, how to splint a broken leg, a broken arm, how to control some bleeding, things along that line. And we'll actually get some hands-on time to be able to do that. So we'll go out to those other communities at another time to be able to provide those same hands-on skills for those community members as well. So that way they're prepared and ready to go for disasters if and when they do happen.
That's fantastic. And this you said it's three sessions. They go all day. They're 9 to 5. And do I have the dates? November 8th, 14th, and 22nd?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And so they can sign up at generationssoutheast.org. It says that they have to register by this Friday. Is that a soft deadline, or is that what you really need from folks?
That is a soft deadline. So especially since we're kind of getting a little late notice on this radio show, we're trying to get some more advertising out as well, just so that we can get as much interest as we can. We really want to try to get as many people into these kind of classes that we can, just because we think that it's such important skills to know. This will actually be the third CERT class that's been taught in Juneau this year. I taught one earlier in May. The Coast Guard hosted one last month, and now we're hosting this one in November. We're just trying some different opportunities to be able to kind of get these skills out so that people can have that opportunity to learn these important skills to have, or to be able to help themselves, their families, their neighbors, their communities in times of need.
And is there a age limit in terms of who can sign up? Do you have to be a certain age to sign up?
Preferably 16 or older, and there is no end date. And there's no capability needs either. So whether you have accessibility issues, disability issues, it does not matter. There is always a job for everybody in CERT. And that's just one of the most phenomenal things about this program. There's always something for somebody to do within the CERT program. So no matter the capabilities of the person, no matter what they, you know, what they think they can or cannot do, there's always something for them to be able to do. So it does not matter the age, the level, the physicality, none of that. There's always something, some way to be able to help out within the CERT protocols.
And as we mentioned at the beginning, this isn't just for Tlingit and Haida members, right? This is open to the community as well.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to make that sure. Yep. We said that again. So people can sign up for this. It's free. It's fantastic training. It sounds like it's amazing, and it's going to make all of our neighbors a little bit more responsive in terms of their abilities to help out. And obviously, we've had many crises recently, and there will be more. And so there's always a need for that. Let me give the details once again. It's the Tlingit and Haida Disaster, just the CERT certification program. It's the Community Emergency Response Team, and they're teaching disaster preparedness, first aid, fire safety, light search and rescue, and other skills to help out and help respond in the time of disasters. It's going to be at Generation Southeast on Hospital Drive. It's November 8th, 14th, and 22nd from 9 to 5, and you can register at generationsoutheast.org for no cost, which is just amazing. That is something that is offered for free. It's really wonderful. So, Alicia, I really thank you for coming on today and telling us about this great program. And again, it's in person in Juneau, but if you know folks in Angoon, Heidelberg, Cake, Kasan, Klawak, Klukwan, Saxman, and Pelican, please let them know that they'll be able to register virtually and take this class. And as Alicia said, she'll be going to those communities at some point later to be able to do some of the hands-on stuff, which I just think is awesome. So really thank you so much for being here. Is there somewhere beyond Generation Southeast that people can, is there a specific website or link for the Public Safety Division, or just go to the main Tlingit and Haida webpage?
We don't have a website for our Public Safety Division, just the main Tlingit and Haida webpage. You can contact, if you have further questions directed towards me, you can contact the Tlingit and Haida Public Safety office, either phone or email. Both of those are available on the website. Generation Southeast, that link that's available there, they'll also have all of the information for the course. And if there's any more detailed questions, they can absolutely forward your request over to me, and I'm happy to answer any questions that people may have. You can also just go on to any of your normal web searches and search up CERT, and you can see some of the videos that other teams throughout the nation have done as far as their trainings, their responses that they've done, and just kind of some of the things that CERT can do for the communities out there. It's a really interesting and really really good program, and I'm really excited to be bringing it to Southeast Alaska.
Great. That's so awesome. Thank you, Alicia. I really appreciate it. Gunnith Cheese, for being here today.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Okay. Up next, we'll get the Arts Roundup with the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, and we'll chat with Caitlin Warblow, who will be performing at the Jack on Monday, November 4th, as part of the Golden Hour Concert Series. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinok John Martin. And the word this week is keet.
Keet.
That means killer whale. And here's a sentence.
Hasani hasaya keet kwan.
Our paternal uncles are killer whale people. Let's hear it again.
Keet.
Killer whale. Gunesh Cheesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kehinuk John Martin was Dakdain Tan and a child of a Kagwan Tan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
such a good song. That's from Warbelow Range, the album. That song is called The Pretty Girl Milking Her Cow. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. It's another month, another first Friday, one more step towards December's Gallery Walk. But first, concerts and first Friday events galore with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. I'm joined by Phil Hibshin and violinist Caitlin Warbelow, who will be in concert this Monday, November 4th. Gwyneth Chi Shat Ye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both here. Phil's in the studio. Caitlin is in her home about to begin traveling because you have concerts starting this Friday in various different places, and then you're going to be making your way up to Juno. Let me just give a little bit of information on that. The concert is Monday, November 4th. It's at Kunikidi Northern Light United Church. The doors open at 6:30. The show is at 7. And pianist Chris Rainey is going to be joining you. And they'll be playing traditional Irish and American music and some original compositions. So I'm really looking forward to that. So, Caitlin, you have a history in Alaska. Can you remind folks about your history and being from Alaska and all that good stuff?
Yes, and thanks for having me. Juno is one of my favorite places in the world, so it's a pleasure to be on the radio, even though I'm sitting here right now in my apartment in New York City. Before I remind you of my Alaska history, I see that you're wearing a hat. What's the temperature there in Juno right now?
Well, Phil's got a hat on as well. We love the beanies, Phil and I. And this is my brand new hat, which is a Kivyut hat that I got in Anchorage.
Oh, nice.
So muskox, and it was this hat actually comes from Bethel, which is awesome. So it's rainy. And I would say, what are we in, the 40s, 30s?
Yeah, I just went on a little walk this afternoon, and it was tolerable.
Yeah, tolerable?
Yeah, tolerable.
Okay. Tolerable, yeah. So yeah, I can feel it getting a little bit colder when the night comes, that's for sure.
I'm jealous because I like the cold, and right now it's in the high 70s, and tomorrow it's going to be in the 80s in New York City here.
Sounds terrible.
It's terrible, yes. I have a Kivyat hat, but I don't even keep it in New York anymore because it doesn't get cold enough.
Oh,
but
that's
anyways,
so funny.
I keep it in Fairbanks, which is where I'm from, to answer your question. I grew up in Fairbanks, went to through high school there, and then I had the notion that I wanted to live on the East Coast for a while, go to school there, which I did. Of course, as soon as I got over there, I realized that Alaska was way cooler than I thought when I was in high school. And so I try to get back there. Even though I've gotten stuck over on the East Coast now for many years, I try to get back there as much as I can. And I come back for the Alaska Folk Fest every year, unless some big gig prevents me from coming back. So I'm really excited to be there in a week, less than a week.
Less than a week. Yeah, it's great to have you coming back in. And I know that for folks, I know on your website, you can go to CaitlinWarbelow.com and you can find out her entire touring schedule and everything that goes on. And for many, many years, until 2022, you were in the company of Come From Away on Broadway, right? You were in the music company for that show?
Yes. That show started off Broadway, did a couple runs in Seattle, DC, Toronto, and then I followed it to Broadway, opened there in 2017. And then, of course, during the pandemic, everything shut down. We were off Broadway for 18 months or so, and then came back. Unfortunately, the industry is not, even now, it's not fully back to normal. So it only ran for about another year after Broadway reopened and then closed in the fall of 2022. But the cool thing is, if anybody wants to see it, if they haven't seen it, it's on Apple TV. So you can watch the original Broadway cast on Apple TV performing the whole show.
And are you on that recording?
Yep. That's the original Broadway cast.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah,
and
cool.
I've been highlighting music today on the show from this album, Warbelow Range, that you put out in 2018. Can you tell us a little bit about that album? And then also, like, are we going to be hearing some of that music on Monday? What are we going to be hearing on Monday?
Yeah, that album is with my band. And actually, speaking of Alaska, that band formed in Alaska over the course of many summers. I I bring artists up in the summer to Fairbanks to perform at the Summer Arts Festival. And some of my best friends have spent the summers up there with me. And we were out hiking around the McCarthy area after the festival one year and got invited to go play at the open mic night at the Saloon there. I don't know if you've been to the Saloon in McCarthy, but it's quite a scene. Anyways, we stayed up late playing music there. And it was after that that we decided, oh, we should be a band and record an album. So that's the result. That album is the result of many summers spent in Alaska playing music together. So the folks on that album are not the person, unfortunately, that I'm going to be playing with on the concert. But the person I'll be with in Juneau is my partner, Chris Ranney, who is an amazing pianist. And he's actually one of the music directors for the Broadway show. So he and I met doing the Broadway show, and now we play together all sorts of music. But what we'll be playing at the concert is Irish music, American music, and then some original stuff that I've written as well. So it's very similar to what's on that recording. It just has two people instead of four people.
I see. Because I know I sort of introduced you as a violinist, but I know also you fiddle as well. And so can you tell me, like, did you start learning these instruments when you were growing up in Fairbanks? How did you get involved in these instruments?
Yeah, I play both violin and fiddle. I'm sure you know and listeners know that it's the same instrument. It's just what you play on it that makes the difference. So if I'm playing classical, then I say violin. If I'm playing fiddle music, I say fiddle. But I find that they're pretty interchangeable. I started playing classical.
Do you hold
music
them differently when you play? Like, as I know the violin is very classical, and then can you be a little bit more free when you're fiddling?
Yes, it's just slightly different. The posture is a little bit more relaxed for fiddle playing, and the bow grip is slightly different. And I work with people when I'm teaching, I work on that. You know, it's almost the same, but it's just some slight differences for getting a different tone quality on the fiddle.
It's really about attitude, right?
It's definitely about attitude as well. And, you know, who your audience is as well.
I grew up
playing classical music. I started when I was three. I don't remember it at all. Apparently there was lots of screaming and crying. Thankfully I don't remember it, but I played classical music all growing up. And then around when I was like five or six, my mom gave me a recording of some Irish music that she liked from a Pacific Northwest band called Banish Misfortune. And I just loved it. And I would sit there and learn the fiddle music when I was supposed to be learning classical music. And eventually I made my teachers really frustrated and my mom frustrated that I liked doing fiddle more than I did classical music. But I did continue with classical music through college at the same time doing Irish music. And then once I landed in New York here, I switched over to doing predominantly fiddle. I sometimes do some classical music as well. And, you know, Broadway has a mixture of both of those things. But yeah, I find the fiddle to be more fun for me, at least at this point.
So these compositions that you're doing, these original compositions, is it more in the fiddle style of music? Is it,
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I don't know what would even happen if I tried to write some classical music, but yeah, it's all fiddle music. And the thing about growing up in Alaska is I'm sure you know this, in the folk scene, like, there's not a ton of people. It's not like in New York where you've got tons of people in each of the genres. So growing up in Fairbanks, I liked the Irish music, but I had to learn tunes in other genres as well, just because there weren't a lot of us playing any one given genre. So my current style now, though I play a lot of Irish Celtic music, is very influenced by lots of different genres. So that's what people will hear if they come. It's like there's some American influences and some Scottish and some, you know, klezmer, and all sorts of different things are kind of mixed together. It's not straight Irish music.
That's so awesome. And I know I mentioned your website, CaitlinWarbelow.com, and you can, and that's Caitlin, CAITLIN, Warbelow, WARBELOW, basically just like it sounds, .com. And you have like a list of where you're going. You're also going to be in Sitka, right? You're just coming to Juneau and Sitka, and then you're bouncing back down, right?
Yeah, I had a couple days to fill in, and I just put the word out, does anybody want to do an Alaska concert? And Sitka and Juneau were the first to respond. So I grabbed those up, and those are also easier to get to from the other places that I'll be, which are Colorado, Washington State, and Oregon. So we're just jumping up for a couple days and then back to the States after that.
Nice. So if you know folks over in Sitka, you can let them know that Caitlin's going to be there. And that you're doing, is that before or after Juneau?
It's after. It's on the 6th, Wednesday the 6th. And we're in Sitka also. We're doing a fiddle workshop, if anybody is a fiddle player in Sitka and wants to do a workshop, on Tuesday the 5th. at the middle school.
I love that. That's so good. So let me give these details once again. Caitlin Werbelow's concert with Kusrani on Monday, November 4th. It's at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6:30. It's at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. And, of course, you can get tickets at jahc.org. Phil's giving me the finger.
Correction. At Northern Lights Church.
Oh, it's at the Northern Lights Church. That's my bad. I did say that earlier. I just assumed that it would be at the Jack, but it's not. It's at the church in the Flats, which is awesome. That's an awesome space for that kind
of
music.
It's very beautiful there. Yeah. I'm really excited.
That's going to be. Well, we welcome you back with warm arms, Caitlin.
I'm really excited for some cold weather, and I will be there soon. It's going to be a lot of fun to see everybody.
That's so great. We really appreciate you joining us for that. So, Phil, we also have some other things to talk about quickly here. First Friday is happening. Tell us what's happening.
First Friday is happening, as it does. We have a lot going on this month, as we always do, or next month, I guess. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I did want to just describe the show going on at the Arts and Culture Center this month. If you've been coming to our First Fridays for a while, you will be familiar with this one. It's the UAS Northwest Coast Student Art Exhibit. We are very proud and happy to collaborate with UAS and be hosting this for the third year in a row. If you're interested in learning about what Northwest Coast art is, can be, and what it looks like, this is a really great show to come to because it is expansive and diverse, and just like it's always in a really cool way kind of all over the place in ways I wasn't expecting and didn't even know it could really be. So it's just a great showcase to come to, and I highly encourage everyone to check it out. I hope that made sense. I feel like I'm rambling.
No, it made total sense. It totally did.
I did also just want to quickly touch on a few other things we have going on this month. Saturday, November 2nd at 10 a.m. is Authors Market and Book Fair at the Arts and Culture Center. So it'll be a really cool thing to come to and find local literature and see what people are writing about. And
that's this Saturday?
That's Saturday, November 2nd.
Okay. Yeah.
And then on the theme of music, we are kicking up Juno Piano Series again in November. November 10th, November 16th, and November 17th are all Juno Piano Series concerts at the Jack, and we're going to be hosting John Hayes, Kristen Blair, and Dario Martin on those dates respectively. So tickets are available on our website, as always, and we are really excited to have that series sponsored by AARP this year, and we're really grateful for their partnership in that. So a lot of great things coming this month that you should definitely check out.
Yeah, and of course you can find everything about First Friday, not just events at the Jack. They have a great list that always they keep up to date, which is at jahc.org/first-friday, or just go to the main page and there's always a link for First Friday, especially when we get to this time. And that's also where you can get tickets for Caitlin's concert at Northern Lights Church on Monday night, which was part of the, I think it's the final concert in the fall Golden Hour concert series that you did.
Yeah.
And that was, there was Waipuna last weekend, and then there was the Pipeline Chorus. Mm-hmm. Was it the week, a couple days before that? And so Caitlin's the finale, the final act in that.
No pressure, Caitlin.
In that fall series. Well, it's a pleasure to have you both join me today. I really appreciate you taking the time. We'll listen to a little bit more of Caitlin Werbelow as we go out today. Gwyneth Cheese, for being here. Caitlin, safe travels. Hopefully we'll
Thank
make
you.
It colder for you, even though
Perfect.
You're going to bring us some warmth. And and we really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's late over there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Gwyneth Cheese. Here we go. Here's a little bit more of Caitlin. And from the album, and the band was Werbelow Range. We'll be right back. will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we talk with author and former Alaska writer Laureate John Staley about his new book, Big Breath In, in which he pays homage to his wife and their shared investigative interests. Also, Fubao on his first Friday event and the upcoming Ghouls Run this Saturday from Girls on the Run. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of Juno Afternoon right here on KTOO, with help today from DJ Thompson. Gunnath cheese. Great evening to you all.